Okay, any NTAG members, feel free to come to the table. Any ICANN staff members here? Okay, so we're going to get started. This is the meeting of the new TLD applicant group. And we'll just we're popping the agenda up so everyone can see it, but we're having some technical difficulties, but I'll just announce what the agenda is. Going through it, we have NTAG business, approval of the minutes, membership update, treasurer's update, timing issues for new TLDs, registry agreement, obviously a hot issue, trademark clearinghouse issues. Then we have the VeriSign SSAC report, NTAG letter related to application fees, some team reports, a domain name industry trade association update, and then any other business that any members want to raise. Does that sound good? Any comments on the agenda? Okay. I don't know if people are in remotely. I'm not on Adobe, but...
it's not open yet.
Okay, so they're working on the Adobe. But why don't we get going anyway? Krista circulated minutes from the meeting of March 19th. Any changes, updates, questions?
There was a non-material change, which was to add two people that attended that we missed. But other than that, they're the same minutes.
Okay. Any other changes? All right. Any objection to having those approved? Okay. Those are approved. NTAG membership update. Krista? Skip that. NTAG treasurer's report.
Hi, Tim Switzer, Dodd Green. So just since the last time we met was in the latter part of 2012, just wanted to kind of go back. We started off with a $5,000 budget. We ended the year with approximately $4,822. We have spent $1,500 in 2013, so our current balance is $3,322.54. There are no known pending expenditures at this time. I would also say that we've got an additional $5,000 from the registry stakeholder group that's kind of set aside in case we were to need more than the current budget we have. So all is well from the budget standpoint. The other thing I would mention is that the registry stakeholder group, the XCOM and Sherry, continue to work on collecting delinquent observer fees, and there are a few folks that continue to be that have not paid or slow paying, so I would continue to ask anyone to please make sure that you keep current with your observer fees. And that's it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Again, this is this is John Nevitt, chair of the NTAG. So I just would request that anyone speaking say their name for the record. Going on in the agenda now, Krista, you ready for the membership report?
Yes.
Excellent.
This is Krista, and I'm not ready. The moment you've all been waiting for. This is Krista. We now have a... This doesn't look right. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we got a lot of members. and, one characterization I saw in the in an email the other day was that we're dominated by portfolio applicants, and the statistics doesn't actually represent that. More than 75% of our members have five or fewer strings, and more than 50% have one string. So we have a very diverse membership working with the other applicants, even those who aren't members of NTAG. We've been coordinating on a lot of things, and we'll get to that when we talk about the registry agreement. Timing issues. So... I'd like to also announce and welcome Christine Ouellette here from ICANN staff.
Thank you. Good morning, John. Christine Ouellette.
Thank you. Do you have anything that you want to share on timing, or you just want to? Okay.
I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay. Why don't we open up for questions? If anyone has any questions on timing issues that haven't been addressed already in the last few days. Christine did a great job with at the GNSO meeting and then at the session on Monday, I believe. So, but if there are any additional questions, raise your hand. Okay. Anyone have any timing issues they want to talk about? Not questions. Everyone's comfortable with timing. Contract first, then testing, right?
Correct. Okay. Contracting, then pre-delegation testing.
Right. Tim?
Hi, Tim Switzer, Dot Green. I actually missed the question part of the session the other day, so this may have been asked. I know that you've ramped up from the 30, a week as far as initial evaluations fit to 50. Is that going to continue to kind of be just a gradual ramp up toward the 100, or will there be like, will you go from maybe 50, this week to boom, you're at 100, or is it kind of a gradual workup?
We're looking at releasing 50 per week, and by that, this Friday, it'll be 42 since we went to 108. We're looking to get to priority number 150 this Friday, 200 the following Friday. I'm anticipating at least 4 weeks, possibly 6 weeks at the 50, and then moving to 100.
Okay. I've got James. And then,
Hi. Just would like Christine here. Hi. James here. I'd like to clarify, because we have some application that is still pending, but it has already passed the priority queue. How do you intend to process that? Is it back? Is it in front of a queue, or does it have to wait until everyone's processed before you go back?
So, if I understand correctly, you have an application that's in the first 108 priority, but you don't have your initial evaluation results published yet. So the reasons for initial evaluation results not being published are a few. One is because it's pending a change request. Two, because there is, unfortunately, we had a few late-breaking clarifying questions. So some of the clarifying questions or responses that were to those questions which were issued late could still be in process. Or it's because the application is in the outreach process, which I described on Monday. So for one of those reasons, we're notifying applicants if the application is being held back. On the week that it would normally expect to receive results, the applicant can expect to receive a notification from the new GTLD team, an email to notify them that their results are being held back and for what reason. That said, those are our highest priority applications. So we anticipate getting those delayed results out as quickly as possible. So I can't commit to whether it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It depends on the situation. Change requests can sometimes take quite a while due to the nature of the change. Other changes, other reasons might be only a matter of delay of 2 to 3 weeks. So you will see on a weekly basis that we'll be releasing some of those held back results on previously prioritized applications.
Thank you, Christine. All right, I've got Ching, and then we have a couple people on Adobe that remotely. So we'll go Ching, remote, Jordan. Not Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning again. Christine, I'm speaking. This is Ching Chao again, speaking for a number of applicants I'm actually working with. So, Christine, I have two questions actually towards to the contractual issue, and it's related to the timeline, and also how could you perhaps picture how, for example, the first 50 or the 60 IDN applicants would kind of interact with ICANN in terms of signing up the contract. For example, the question is actually, do you send him, for example, at the end of April, saying everything runs smoothly, and you're sending them, for example, a January version contract, or you're asking them to wait for a new version? Or, for example, how does that work in terms of interacting with the applicants in terms of signing a contract? And my second, actually, item is that I hate to bring this up, but really the first 60s are the IDN applicants. How do you envision them signing the contract without knowing potentially there could be a variant program to be developed, methodology, quote-unquote, next year? How do you envision, or do you have any thoughts to share on those applicants to sign a contract, but with a placeholder clause saying that, hey, there could be additional, strings that could be delegated to you next year? Thanks.
So this is Christine Ouellette. On the process of contract signing, I mentioned in the Monday briefing that there are a number of documents to be exchanged with the applicants. Once we are in receipt of GAC advice, we will have clarity on which applications can proceed into contracting. Once we have that clarity, then our intention is to begin to reach out to those applicants which have passed initial evaluation, do not have objections, do not have GAC advice, and are not in contention, to begin that exchange of data and information for contracting. That said, clearly until there is an approved and finalized registry agreement, there would be nothing to sign from the applicant's part. But we do anticipate beginning that process as soon as possible. In terms of IDN applicants signing the registry agreement, I understand the variant issue. I think it would be up to the applicants upon the advice, legal advice, how to enter into that agreement, what that agreement ultimately looks like, and whether or not you choose to move down the negotiated path versus accepting the standard agreement. The IDN variant program, there's another track going on separate from the new GTLD program. The new GTLD program is not about delegating those variants. It's about delegating the applied for strings. So it's, from my perspective, it's an issue. It's a separate issue.
Thank you. All right, I've got a question remote from Elaine Pruis. Is the IBM TMCH function going to be open for registrar registry testing before June 30th?
That is the current project plan. There is a session tomorrow on Trademark Clearinghouse. I think it might be at 9 a.m., Thursday morning, 9 a.m., and there will be more information in that session about a timeline for the Trademark Clearinghouse and integration testing.
Great. Thank you, Christine. All right. I've got Jeff, you had a clarifying question?
Yeah, 2 points. Clarifying. That's good. I like the pun. On Ching's point, Ching, one of the and we'll get to this, one of the things in the RA discussions is on variants. So hopefully we'll, through those discussions, we'll clarify that issue. The next steps, I'm hoping the answer is not going to be yes, but I'll ask it anyway. Is everything going to be done through TAS moving forward?
And by everything you mean?
All the submission of documents and everything, all communication, the fact that we never get a person's name or someone to contact or a phone number or anything like that?
The answer is no. Yes. Thank you, thank you. I mentioned on Monday that we are in the process of deploying a new system for applicant support. It's based on the Salesforce platform. So just to address this briefly, all of the primary contacts for applicants will be receiving a notification in the next few days to begin the credential process and to onboard into the new system. That will be launching next Tuesday, U.S. time.
Thank you. Okay. I have Craig Schwartz.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Christine, for coming. Craig Schwartz from FDLD Registry Services, the community applicant for .bank and .insurance. And I regrettably missed some of the question and answer session that you had after your presentation the other day. My question is around the timing of election of community priority evaluation. And what I understand to be in the guidebook is that CPE could be elected as soon as all of the contending strings or contending applicants for that string or similar strings are through initial evaluation, which for those applicants with good priority numbers could be sometime in perhaps May. And what I thought I heard in the session the other day is that no community priority evaluation will begin until September. I'd like to understand if that's correct and how was that decision made, as it's a fundamental change in the guidebook.
Thank you, Craig. The timing of community priority evaluation, and in fact, many aspects of the sequence of events and dependencies and timing of events, as originally described in the guidebook, have been affected by the move to priority numbers. And since the guidebook also presumed 500 applications or batches of 500 applications, and we now clearly have nearly 2,000, and we've moved away from many of the operating assumptions that were in the guidebook around those batches of 500. We've had to adjust various things, including the election for community priority evaluation. I understand your point about there are some contention sets that are based on priority number grouped earlier than others. The intention by allowing for the additional time is to allow applicants in all contention sets to see the results of all initial evaluation before opting into community priority evaluation. There is a balancing act. As I also mentioned in my session on Monday, I'm working to define very specific operational procedures for every function within the new GTLD program. Procedures which dictate staffing requirements, procedures which dictate the system tools, procedures which define how these steps are performed, including CPE, community priority evaluation, auctions, extended evaluation, etc. In order for the new GTLD program to be operationally ready to support one of these functions, one of these phases of activity, we need all aspects to be in place: the procedures, the people, the tools, the vendor with the guidance required. Once all of those are in place and we are operationally ready to support community priority evaluation, I would certainly entertain beginning community priority evaluation earlier, if possible. But the timeline that we depicted was based on two things. One, our current timeline for operational readiness, and two, the timeline for completion of initial evaluation.
Thank you. All right, I've got Anthony and Jordan and Jim.
Thank you, John. Christine, as you have probably heard, there's a great deal of confusion now around the idea of what ICANN has encouraged applicants to do, which is to sort these things out between themselves. I refer specifically to the non-issuance of a letter from the Department of Justice regarding private auctions. What is ICANN, given that it encourages applicants to sort things out, what steps is it taking to provide any guidance to applicants regarding private auctions, since this is an easy way to do that and possibly the only way? And if it's not doing anything, why not?
So you're correct, Anthony. We have not provided guidance to applicants. I think that there are a variety of mechanisms applicants may choose to use to resolve contentions, and we're leaving that up to applicants to resolve amongst themselves. We do intend to have the auction capability operational in the September-October timeframe as a mechanism of last resort for those applicants, those contention sets, which cannot resolve amongst themselves.
Can you explain to me, I know that ICANN has a great deal of the applicant's money, and it is in many cases to be used, there's a set aside for a legal reserve fund. It occurs to me that that fund could possibly be better used and would not need to be used to the extent that applicants could decide these things among themselves. Why isn't ICANN, because private auctions are a mechanism that many people are interested in, they seem to be the only way, short of the auction of last resort, that large contention sets can be resolved. It would be extremely helpful to the applicants if ICANN could give some guidance on that. Thank you.
I'll definitely take that message back and discuss it with the team.
Thank you, Christine. All right, I've got Jordan and then Jim, and then we're going to close this part because this wasn't the intention of this section, but that's fine.
Thanks. So I just want to come back to the community priority evaluation discussion for 1 second. I agree with Craig that slowing down community evaluation to wait for all initial evaluations is both not in the guidebook and not what NTAG has previously recommended. I do note that in November we sent ICANN a letter. One of the recommendations in that letter was that not only should community priority evaluation be triggered when all of the evaluation for the contention set was complete, but when the community applicant's evaluation was complete. And so that's potentially much, much earlier in the process. And as I think the general intent behind this is, as with everything around sequencing versus batching, is that you get a much smoother flow, and perhaps that might make your operational readiness easier as well, so you don't have to do all of the community evaluation essentially at once. You can do them sort of as the initial evaluations trigger in. So I would certainly advise, to the extent that you have the ability to get the operational readiness issues taken care of, if you can try to sort of smooth out the community priority evaluation, it would be super helpful.
Is it the same people doing it as doing anything else, or is it just a different process? Like, are you taking it from some other function to do that, or are they different people that could be doing it contemporaneously anyway?
There is a different panel, expert panel, that will be doing the community priority evaluation. I'm spending a lot of time organizing the staff, so we are building the team to become operationally ready. I hear the issue. We'll certainly take it back, take it under advisement.
Great,
so
thank you. Jim, last comment?
Sure, Jim Prendergast. Christine, actually two questions, I guess. The community priority evaluation panel, will that be ICANN staff or will that be an independent outside body?
It's an independent expert panel.
All right, cool. And then on the auctions, the ICANN auction of last resort. It's so weird talking to you and this thing in my face. what's the process that ICANN is going to follow to select a vendor? Is that going to be an RFP, or how's that going to work?
So we have used a vendor that assisted us with the design of the auction process, and we have, I believe we have various MOUs or understandings with that vendor for that purpose of defining the process. We will likely need to put in place an additional agreement for the conduct of the auctions. Those conversations are underway.
Okay. Can you name the vendor?
It's been out there.
Oh,
Power.
Is it?
Power.
Okay.
Power.
Auction.
Auction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to personally thank Christine for coming and fielding questions. I don't know if she realized she was going to do that. I didn't know if I realized she was going to do that. But and I also want to commend you for, you know, we sent a letter in December talking about delays and a fair number of concerns, and I don't think you've missed the deadline since then. So thank you very much. Sure. Okay. Next on the agenda is the very pressing issue of the registry agreement, the new TLD agreement that we all will have to sign once we're ready and through initial evaluation, and as Christine mentioned, you know, having gone through the GAC advice process. So for those folks who were at the registry stakeholder group meeting yesterday and people on the list know that we set up a group of volunteers to meet with ICANN over the last, so far, 2 days. We've met from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. both yesterday and today, and we've compiled a list of issues. As you all know, ICANN came up with a new proposed registry agreement, not the one that was in the guidebook, but in February they came up with one. We sent a letter. They came up with a new version in April 1st, and now we're working through that process. Whether we think that we need to do this or not, or that we should have just stuck with the agreement that was in the guidebook that we all relied on, is a separate issue, but we are in good faith going through the proposed changes and actually proposing some changes of our own. So we have a list of topics and issues that maybe Krista could just really briefly run through, or you could give me the list and I could run through them, just so everyone's on the same page. Sure. Jeff, you have it in front of you?
Yeah,
if you could. But very high level.
Yes,
would be great.
Very high level. So first issue is pass-through of trademark clearinghouse fees. There's been some discussion of what the fees are, and so there's going to be a provision put into the agreement that states what the fees are that we have to pass through. That was pretty high level. 7.5 is a subcontracting provision and change of control. There were some just general issues of assigning a contract between affiliates and also to what extent ICANN needs to approve those changes. Those are being discussed. The biggest issue, of course, is the extraordinary amendment. What was previously called the public interest amendment is now actually an extraordinary amendment process where essentially goes through an entire flowchart, and I think that flowchart was sent around to this group yesterday. I'm getting my days mixed up, but right.
Yeah, you sent a photo. This is Krista. You sent a photo around yesterday. I actually just got an updated. I got the actual version of it that's much easier to read, which I'll send around to the group shortly.
Okay.
If I can.
Thanks. So there's that amendment process, and I'm sure there might be questions. And then there is a new amendment process for, I guess, lack of a better word, certain commercial terms that's still being worked through, whereby either the ICANN CEO or the chair of the registry stakeholder group can initiate discussions based on what either group wants. There's it's really just mostly for discussion, and ultimately, if both sides still want those, or one side really wants those changes, then there's an arbitration process built in. There is a discussion, which I think may be on here as well, for the PIC. Yeah, it's the next subject or one of the next subjects, the PIC DRP, the dispute resolution policy for the PIC specs that were filed. I'll just save that because I know it's going to be a longer topic we'll talk about. There are a couple changes that some of us believe should be made to the code of conduct to reflect actual realities of how registries operate, as opposed to the strict rigid language that's in there. There is a section that we would like to add about conflicts with local law. So many of you know that if there is an issue with who is right now, where a registry or registrar believes that there's something about who is that requires them to do something or not do something that's required by law, that registry or registrar can bring that to the attention of ICANN, work through a process to come up with some way that that registry or registrar can comply with local law. Well, a number of us would like to see that entire process moved from just who is to basically everything under the registry agreement. And I know there have been a lot of comments recently from a bunch of registries in different jurisdictions that have wanted some sort of process to deal with this. And I think this process, if we're able to get it, would go a long way to address some of those concerns with complying with local law. There's, just to jump through the others, there's a few IDN issues with escrow and who is of variance, which are being worked through. There is a, fee commencement. Actually.
Yeah, could I take that one?
Yeah, I'll turn that over to you. Fee commencement.
This was one of my favorite ones. We looked at the fee provision because they changed, clarified it a tiny bit, and then we realized that the fee provision begins upon contracting, not upon delegation. And especially with contracting being before pre-delegation testing and way before delegation, we thought it was perfectly appropriate that our fees start kicking in not upon execution of the contract, but upon delegation when we're actually operating. So we're putting that into the proposal, and I hope folks support that. And Christine, you know, we talked to JJ and others today already, but just to give you a heads up that we think that if there's a bottleneck or something after contracting, we're very concerned about the time delay and the fact that, you know, we're not selling any domain names or providing any domain name services and having to pay ICANN.
Yeah, I mean, we already know that there's inherently an initial bottleneck, yeah. not at the fault of ICANN, but or at least Christine's group.
Jeff, this is James. Sorry for interruption. Just want to clarify that, John, you were talking about a quarterly fee, right? It's not a per-domain transaction fee.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that fee normally kicks in when you sign the contract, but we know that even if someone were to sign the contract on April 23rd or May 1st or whenever that comes out, we know the first TLD is not going to be delegated for a few months after that, so there's no reason that fee should be paid even prior to delegation. And then the last issue is so there's no requirement in the agreement right now to have, which we like, to have your registrar agreement approved by ICANN. But for some reason, there is a requirement to have any changes to that agreement approved by ICANN. So they don't have to approve the initial one, but they have to approve any changes. Our initial position would be we'd love to just strike that out completely. But if we have to live with something like that because the registrars are insisting, then at least some sort of materiality be applied to that. So it's only material changes that would need to be approved by ICANN. And that's the issues.
Thanks, Jeff. Any questions on those issues? Anthony?
Yes, thank you, John. With regard to the local law provisions, I think it would be very helpful if, given that some of the laws that are at issue are quite well known, and they, in particular, they have to do with privacy laws in the European Union, it would be helpful perhaps if instead of having all the applicants who have European-based TLDs have to go through this process separately, if perhaps ICANN could look at some of the areas that they know are going to be issues and actually begin work early on that, and perhaps have a standard set of agreements for instance, who is an European privacy issue.
Okay, we have a comment from someone on the Adobe chat that they can't hear that well, so if you guys could speak right into the mic, that would be helpful. I assume you could hear me, but if not, let me know on Adobe. Sorry, Christine, I think something she'll take back to JJ and...
Happy to take it back to the legal team.
Thank you. Any other questions on these contract issues? Again, Tim?
Tim Switzer, Dot Green. So one thing I want to make sure everybody's clear on is that this is all happening, these discussions with ICANN and going back and forth on the agreement, is happening in real time. You know, John mentioned a couple of sessions over the last couple of days. We're trying to keep everybody updated. We're sending out updates with what we're working on, what are the key issues. So I guess my only point is keep a close watch on the mailing list. Provide us your feedback. We're wanting to keep everybody looped in, but we also want to make sure we're hearing from you. So please stay close to this. It's happening in real time over the next days, weeks, or whatever.
Bill?
Bill Dozier, applicant.buzz, vice chair of the NTAG. And to Tim's point, my question is, do we have a plan or an idea as a single applicant kind of watching this from a distance? Is the negotiating group taking care of this for all of us? Are we expecting to hear a report from them? What is the plan for letting all of us know that we've got an agreement and going to go forward?
You want to answer that, Jordan?
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily speak on behalf of the negotiating group, but certainly one thing I'm endeavoring to do is, as the list of issues updates or gets disposed of, or you know, I sent out a summary email of all of the issues that we had in play as of last night. I'm working right now to update that to bring that up to date with all the stuff that Jeff just talked about, and we'll sort of keep. We're definitely trying to keep the entire group informed about what's going on. And I think the intent is that this is going to be the base registry agreement that everyone signs, and unless you want to negotiate exceptions to it.
Right. That's a good point. Any applicant individually could try to negotiate the agreement. The question is whether you're in the fast lane or kind of veer off into a little slower lane. So we all want to ideally be in the fast lane, I think. Jordan sent out a list. Krista just sent out a list. Based on this morning's negotiations, I think Jordan's preparing a more detailed list, and these guys will coordinate and hopefully have one email going out every so often when we have an update. We have another session today at 3:30 and then another session tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. So we're, as Jordan said, really pushing it in real time. We're all incented to get this done as soon as possible. Okay. Any other questions on the contract? Okay. PIC-DRP is part of the contract, and then also a separate public comment period going on, and there was some traffic on our list about that. So the PIC, or Public Interest Commitment Dispute Resolution process, was a proposal from ICANN to have the ability for third parties to file a suit or file an arbitration against registry operators for failure to comply with the public interest commitments. A number of registry applicants filed PICs during the PIC process, and a number will file PICs presumably based on what comes out of the GAC this week. So the issue is, how do those get enforced? From most of us in the room, certainly on the people who are in the negotiation room think that it should be ICANN enforcing those and not open to any third party in the world. And ICANN should have a process to intake information from anyone who might have a complaint or concern that an applicant isn't following their PICs, but that ICANN should be doing the enforcement and not a third-party process, which is very expensive for both the objector and the respondent, the registry operator. So that's the view. If you looked at the public comment periods, I believe there were four or five comments from members of NTAG. Google filed a comment along those lines, and then Validaeus and Demand filed comments, as did we, which said, you know, we like the Google comments that say ICANN should be doing the enforcement, and then if we have to go down the road, we really have to tighten up the process to make sure that there aren't frivolous complaints, and we have to spend a lot of money defending frivolous complaints. So it's standing, scope, burden of proof, things like that. So we'd have to really roll up our sleeves and negotiate those. So the hope is ICANN will agree that they will be the enforcement mechanism like every other part of the contract, with one or two exceptions. And then we could come up with a process together with them, not in the next 2 days. So that's where our negotiating team, I don't even like the word negotiating team because it's all, it's a group of volunteers that are willing to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning hungover and negotiate these contracts with ICANN. So any comments on the PIC DRP? Maxim?
Maxim Alzoba, FATIT. The one question. When ICANN is going to release closed parts of application, so third parties are aware of business plans mentioned in PIC DRP, is this date just available? For example, there is said that we should comply as an applicant with the business plans in our applications. So to know our business plans, they should be open to anyone. When it happens, the question is.
Oh, I assume that's going to be part of your contract. So I presume that, I don't know, but I presume that they would do that as part of the registry agreement, which is public. Is that fair? Christine?
So, yes, the registry agreement, once signed, will certainly be posted for public review. There are definitely portions of the application which are confidential, which we do not currently have a mechanism in place for publishing the entire application. There are financials and various aspects of that. But I'll take
that. I think the question is if an individual applicant's PIC references a certain provision in their agreement, like question 18, answer 18, we will comply with answer 18 as part of our PIC, then ICANN presumably would have to publish that as part of that applicant's registry agreement.
Yeah, and I think most of question 18 is public, but yes.
Well okay, whatever,
yes.
28 or...
Right, so yes, it would have to be part of the agreement.
Right.
So I think the Jeff? Wording, so I had this issue too. The wording of Spec 11 was very confusing, but the business plan's modified by whether you filed a PIC or not. So it's not that all business plans are subject to any kind of dispute process. It's only if you filed a PIC and that PIC referenced a business plan. Does that make sense? The wording is really confusing in Spec 11, and so, I initially had the same interpretation, but it is modified in that respect.
That makes sense.
And on the PIC, just why this is so important, dispute resolution, as many of you noticed, there's a lot of objections filed to applications, and if you could just picture, and a lot of frivolous ones at that, and that's my own personal interpretation, but I think many in the room agree there's a lot of frivolous objections filed. And regardless of whether or not you win in the end against these frivolous disputes or objections, you still pay a lot of money, whether you're paying an outside counsel, outside lawyer, or even just the administrative fees at the dispute resolution provider, which you do not get back. The amount of frivolous complaints that will be filed under the PIC DRP, it will be immense. It makes the objections look like nothing. And to be forced as a registry to undergo these costs where, I mean, I'll put this on the record too. The objections filed by the ALAC are, I'll say it, a joke. But you're going to be facing a lot of those. And the process they filed, the ALAC, with lobbying and stuff, this is a huge issue. And this is one where we need support from this group to make sure that if there is enforcement of the PICs, it needs to be done by ICANN and ICANN alone. Let ICANN handle the complaint process and weed out the frivolous ones from the non-frivolous, and let ICANN bring it to the registry to work out.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay. Jim?
Yeah, just to pick up on what Jeff said, I spent part of the morning yesterday watching the board ALAC interaction, and they are very much pushing for letting just about anybody come in and file a complaint with no cost, with no evidence of harm, no standing whatsoever. So you've got that push on one side. And then we heard in the GAC board session the GAC wanting to weigh in on PICS, probably without cost. So it's come from both ends, so we've got
to
watch it.
Exactly. So there is a process for – there has to be a process for ICANN to intake those third-party complaints, those complaints from the GAC or those complaints from third parties. It doesn't mean that the GAC needs to be the complainant in a third-party process. And I don't think they want to do that. So Jordan did – okay. Anything else on PICS, PIC DRP? Okay, moving on. We have trademark clearinghouse issues. Jeff?
Yeah, there's a session tomorrow on the trademark clearinghouse between, I think it's, we just had 9 to 11. There are a number of issues that policy and business related that are actually embedded in the requirements document. So I sent around to the groups a couple days ago a new document that was posted by ICANN that contained basically two parts. One, the first part was a requirements doc, and the second part was legal terms and conditions. Now, the lawyers in the room will be the first to notice that the legal terms and conditions are completely one-sided, all in favor of IBM, no service levels, no obligations on behalf of the clearinghouse, no indemnities, no warranties, basically. It's the registry that makes all the warranties, all the indemnities, no confidentiality protections. Basically, carte blanche, it's all the registry's fault. So that's a problem. But the other issues you may not notice is that the requirements document is written sort of in not really legalese, but it's written in kind of IETF language where it basically says the registry must do this or the registry shall do this or may do this. And depending on how people familiar with those documents know how to interpret those. But there are a number of things in that document that actually will affect the business models of applicants. And I know nobody's paid attention, but there are things in there, for example, that says that a registry may not reserve a name until after the sunrise period is over. Which means that, as ridiculous as that sounds, that means that a trademark owner always trumps even any reserved name that the registry wants for itself. We all know that that's not reality, and that's not something that should exist, but that's in the document, which is buried in there. There's also another provision, what's called asynchronous registration. So normally, when a registration is taken, it's on a first-come, first-served basis, right? After a registry launches, you go in, you register a name. If you're first, you get it. But during sunrise processes or what some of us call land rush processes when a registry launches, oftentimes applications are collected in batches and then ultimately could be auctioned off if there are multiple applicants or if there's only one applicant, it goes to the one applicant. The way the rules are written, without getting too technical here because it's a deep issue, basically during the claims process or during a sunrise process, the data that a registrant or a registrar submits to prove it owns the trademark, that file, that has an expiration date. So if the sunrise process is 60 days, so let's say you collect sunrise applications on day one and then you do an auction on day 60 or day 90. Unfortunately, because the way the rules are written, that code would expire and then you'd have to go back to the registrant and get them to resubmit the file. So, which is ridiculous, right? It's not the way the registration flow works. Same issue happens in claims. If you have a claims period during the first 90, 120 days where you get an acknowledgement of a claim on day one from a registrant, but you don't auction it off until day 60, the rules now would require you to go back to the registrant to get their second acknowledgement because the first acknowledgement expired. So I know some of this is a little technical, but I tried to make it in terms of business rules that you understand. There's a lot of them in there. We'll discuss some of it tomorrow during the clearinghouse session, but I urge, and I'll try to help the list by narrowing down the business issues that are in there, but it's something we need to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's a good point. The fees is another issue that we saw for the first time in that document where it's a $5,000 per TLD setup fee and then a 30 cent per transaction fee. So we have to pay 30 cents for any sunrise registration and then any any successful registration that implicated the claims process. And by increasing the claims period during the straw man proposal from 60 to 90 days, our costs for those transactions just went up by 50%. So, you know, we personally, I know I personally, and we as a group didn't endorse. In fact, we encouraged ICANN to stick with the claims process with the 60-day limit and not extend to 90. So now we're paying more because it's being extended to 90. So, you know, if you have any conversations about fees, you might want to raise that issue that we shouldn't have to pay for it. Not only did we not want this, but now we're paying for it, which seems a bit unfair, to say the least. Okay, any questions on trademark issues? Jeff? Eckhouse.
Yes, thank you. It's Jeff Eckhouse here. And I wanted to comment on something Jeff Newman just stated, because I had and we can discuss it more in detail in the trademark clearinghouse meeting tomorrow, but about the clause about the reserving of names. From what I was reading, and hopefully some of the other people in the room, maybe some who are lawyers, can help clarify it. But from my reading, it was that the registry operator must not allow a domain name to be reserved or registered to a registrant, is the reading, not that it's for registry purposes. So I just
right.
I wanted to...
The contract says, though, if you use a name, even if it's the registry, then you have to go through a registrar, so you become the registrant. So if you read those clauses in conjunction, you yourself are a registrant if you want to use those names.
Even if it's on a registry reserve?
Well, that's restricted, too. Yeah, so let's talk about that. But these are things that need to be
I agree. Yeah. I agree that, just to echo Jeff's point, that I've been working with Jeff and others on the trademark clearinghouse for a long time, and these provisions are, there are a lot of issues here, and I advise everyone who's a member of the NTAC here to attend that session tomorrow.
Yeah, so I think it might make sense to set up a trademark clearinghouse working team where we could get a group and maybe a list of people who are interested in working on those issues together. It sounds like we have got some volunteers. Sherry or Krista, could you? You got. Raise your hand if you want to be added to that list.
Okay,
wait,
can you maybe leave
an email? Okay. All right, or maybe how about you send an email? If you're interested in being on the list, send an email to Krista. Or Cherry? Krista. Okay. Thank you. Anything else in the clearinghouse? All right. I don't see Keith. We're going to move on to the NTAG letter related to application fees. Tim?
Tim Switzer, .green. So recently, I sent out a letter that we had drafted to ICANN concerning the likely excess fees that would come out of the application fees that had been collected, the $350 million. There was a lot of dialogue back and forth about this letter and the timing. So to frame this issue, I thought it might be worthwhile to just kind of go through and talk about what I think we agree relative to this and where our disagreement is. So I think for the most part, we do agree this is an important issue. I think we agree that there will be very likely excess money from the $350 million fees collected. We do agree this is a separate issue from the auction funds, that has a path of its own. I think we also agree that there are other important issues going on right now beyond this issue, obviously the registry agreement and so on and so forth. And the other clarification is this letter was not getting into what do we do with the excess fund, here are suggestions. It was simply saying we should start kicking off an effort to look into this, you know, sooner than later. So I think for the most part that's kind of what we agree on. Where the disagreement is amongst this group is that, again, the thought with the letter was, let's get this process kicked off sooner than later. This will take time, and there's potential uses of this money that we could benefit from as a group and as a community if we're able to do this and use some of these funds in the coming months versus 12 or 18 months out. The other thought is that sending this letter now would be a distraction to ICANN. As I mentioned, we've got other pressing issues, and why send this now? Yes, it's important, but maybe we should wait. So that's just kind of a framing of the issue. So while we're here, why don't we, let's hear some input from kind of both sides, both thoughts of this, and see what folks think.
Krista?
This is Krista. I have a question, Tim, about this a distraction for ICANN. I'm trying to visualize in my head what the process would look like. You know, do we put together like a cross-community working group on this? Like, who at ICANN would this go to? Would there be someone from the policy staff? Because I'm not convinced that we're the distraction, that it would necessarily be a distraction for like Christine's team. It might come out of some other part of ICANN that maybe isn't. I mean, we're all tasked, heavily tasked. But anyway,
Tim Switzer, I agree, and I don't know. I do think. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure how this process will get teed up. I mean, as far as a, you know, how ICANN will kick this off, it will clearly be something that will have to be put out to the community. And I think it, as far as the folks that we are, for example, working with on the registry agreement, and as far as Christine and all the work her team, I don't think either one of those entities will be touching this issue. So my opinion is it wouldn't slow down any of the things we're doing right now. As far as how this process gets kicked off, I'll be honest, I'm just not sure. But I think our point is ICANN, the process should be kicked off. Please initiate it.
What are some of the potential short-term uses that...
Well, you want to get Jordan...
Yeah, could you just address that? Thanks.
Tim Switzer again. So I think one of the things that we've talked about, not necessarily we as an NTAG group, I mean, this is more like maybe, you know, hall talk and things like that, is that you could take some of these funds and put it toward Sally Kosterman's, you know, worldwide global awareness budget. And that's certainly, you know, a good thing that ICANN is going out there, and maybe ICANN's allocated a certain amount of money toward that. But again, knowing that I think we all are pretty confident there's going to be a pretty sizable excess from this. I mean, you could take potentially $10 million and put it toward this global awareness campaign and really put some teeth into it, and that would be a benefit to all. That's one thought. And again, there's other people, I'm sure, have other ideas, and but that's one thing that would be from a timing standpoint, could benefit all of us.
Okay. I've got a list. I've got Reg, I got Jordan, and then Anthony.
And
Carla first. Okay.
So there's a session today at 11 o'clock. I can finance open session. Maybe somebody from NTAG can post.
Yeah, and that's question. We raised this issue with ICANN Finance, and they said it's a broader issue than finance. It should be more of a board level issue. So, but we probably should raise it there as well. Okay, Reg.
I don't think that we should really be all that concerned with confusing ICANN, because they're constantly tossing things at us that we are scrambling to catch. So if we have something that we're ready to toss back, then let's toss it back. We don't rush it. We don't delay it. We do it in our time.
Thank you. Jordan.
So I'm not sure I agree with that. I think we want ICANN to be able to focus on executing on the current plan as much as possible, and to the extent we're annoyed and find it harder to do our jobs when ICANN tosses random stuff at us, that it's not inconceivable that when we toss stuff at them, that would have a similar effect. So even though it might be fair, it might not actually be consistent with our objectives. But I think, you know, thinking about this issue, there's a couple points I'd like to make. One is, in regards to the finance issue, at a minimum, I think we need some financial analysis from ICANN. ICANN has to agree that there's going to be surplus funds before this conversation is meaningful. And I think getting some analysis or projection as to whether ICANN agrees that there's likely to be a surplus is a critical place to start. And I don't think we need a letter to do that, like the finance forum session or whatever is probably a great place to start. And that relates to my second point, which is I'm not sure, you know, writing a letter to ICANN is necessarily the best way to accomplish our objectives here. I think since we've raised the issue of refunds in the past and it wasn't well received by the board, I think it might be perceived as yet another attempt at raising that issue, just, you know, without actually saying refunds at the bottom. And I know, you know, Tim has other ideas in mind, but, you know, just I think through constructive engagement with folks like Christine to, you know, let her, you know, we want awareness programs, like that might be a good use of the funds if ICANN determines, like, let's let ICANN know that we think there's some things they could be doing with this money that would be constructive, and let's work to try to make sure that ICANN agrees that there's a surplus. But I don't think we need to write a big public letter that does potentially sort of take their eye off the ball.
Anthony?
Anthony Vancouvering. To Jordan's point, I'm not sure, but correct me if I'm wrong, that the board said anything. I believe Dr. Crocker said something off the cuff, like, no, you're not getting any of it back. So I am concerned that there are other groups within ICANN already convening, planning to spend this money somewhere. And I think I have heard of them. I don't know what blessing they have from ICANN or anything. I think as to whether there is going to be a surplus, procedurally perhaps, that's not recognized. But, you know, I don't want to stand on ceremony here. You know, is there a surplus? Yes, there's a surplus. I mean, for one thing, there's $65 million in a legal fund, which may or may not be spent.
120.
Thank you. 120. Thank you. Sure. So let's not get caught down in, you know, following the steps very nicely and dancing the dance when, indeed, there are maybe other people pushing ahead with this. I think if there's a debate going on, we should be in it. Thank you.
Okay. Jordan, you want to reply? And then I got Bill.
Yeah. I mean, just briefly want to say, unless you can talk about at least sort of a rough order of magnitude of what the surplus looks like, then the options available on the table of what could be done with the money is like it's like saying, you know, if it's a $100 million surplus, then the range of things that you might do with it are very different than if it's going to be a $5 million surplus. And, you know, whether there's discussions, you know, I think at the very least getting ICANN to, and unless ICANN does agree that there is a surplus, it's never going to come back. It's never going to go anywhere other than sitting around for years and years and years. So that seems like the right place to start in terms of making sure that there's agreement that there is money to be allocated somewhere.
Bill
Dozier, a couple of personal thoughts. I haven't vetted this with anybody, so that usually gets me in trouble with this group when I make comments that I haven't checked out. But three things come to mind. First, from experience, my thoughts would be we need to move quickly. Comments, communications from this group at a minimum. Once you kind of push the button to go, you're looking at 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks on something like this would be my guess. So you can kind of add that lead time to when our letter or thoughts would come out. Second, important, any part of $350 million to me looks like that gets moved up the list in priority fairly quickly. And lastly, I'd just be one to comment, I think there should be some consideration that the money come back to the applicants to help them run a quality business.
I've got Amanda.
Amanda Fezzanin, Union Registry. I think we're still of the stance that if we don't know the costs, we should wait on this. I think we'd rather not have ICANN get distracted until we know all the costs are set.
Okay. And that would that include the risk fund? You know, there's two parts. There's $120 million in the risk fund. There's $230 million to process applications. They have a much better idea of how much of the 230 they're going to use, obviously less of an idea of how much of the 120 they're going to use. So are you advocating waiting till both get resolved or just the application?
Yeah, for both, yeah. We want to see what all the costs are going to be, and we don't want to distract right now. We think this would actually be a distraction.
So if the statute of limitations on a breach of contract claim in California is 3 years, would you wait 3 years? Or?
Well, no. I think not keep it until the end. I think just right now, it's not the time to do it.
Okay. All right. Kristen, did you want to be in the queue? I thought I saw your hand go up. Nope. All right. Anyone else? Did I miss anyone? Anyone on the Adobe? Nope. Tim, you want to wrap?
So just Tim Switzer. So just an additional comment kind of on what Anthony was saying is that if in fact there are other parts of the community that are, you know, seeing dollar signs and are starting to, you know, lobby potentially about, you know, getting access to these funds, I think that would tend to be an argument toward, you know, we should proactively get this teed up and get it out in the open so it's not being talked about, you know, kind of behind closed doors and in hallway discussions. Let's get this issue teed up. And if people want to start, you know, during that process, if people start coming out and laying claim to this money, well, let's get that out. Let's see it. Let's talk about it as a community and kind of use our standard, you know, multi-stakeholder model to kind of get this teed up, and not that you know, everything we say is necessarily going to carry the day, but let's at least get those ideas out there.
You know, one potential use we just got hit with as a applicant community. Let's say there are 1,200 new TLDs at $5,000 dollars per TLD for the Trademark Clearinghouse. This, what's that, $6 million right there, plus 30-cent transaction fee. You know, we certainly could encourage ICANN to use the new TLD funding, the application funding, to help fund the clearinghouse. That could be certainly a request that we all can make as a group. Jordan?
Yeah, I do think concrete ideas about if there's a surplus, here's things you could do with them. Would be a lot more helpful than saying, hey, I think it'll just be interpreted as yet another attempt to get refunds. If that's our intent, then let's just say that. And if that's not our intent, then let's say what we mean. Because I especially if it's short term, if we are vague about it, we're not going to get short term action.
Kristen?
Just building on what you said too, Jordan, I mean, and back to Tim's initial statement, part of what we're saying is to kick off the process of trying to figure out how to address that. So part of what we could be saying is that somebody from ICANN Finance should be part of this and be taking a look at where these, you know, doing the math on this in addition to us providing, or, you know, having some community group providing, you know, ideas and feedback on how to use the funds.
Okay. Any other comments? Christine, is that your hand up?
I'm happy to take everything I've heard back to ICANN and the finance team and begin discussions. Make sure that these messages and these interests are heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Tim, do we have a what's the plan?
Tim Switzer. So I think. Well, I was thinking what my plan, what my suggested plan was going to be until Christine just said that. So maybe here's two thoughts. I mean, I could redraft the letter and include in the letter a starting concept of, first of all, please analyze what you think the excess funds may be, you know, and then the letter may be similar to what it is. Maybe we throw examples for potential uses into the letter. Maybe we don't. If we continue down that path, I think we're probably headed toward, we probably need to send this letter back out. I don't know if we go get input and do a formal vote, because there does seem to be a difference of opinion. But now, given Christine's comments, maybe we let Christine go off and work this and pick a date of 2 weeks out and maybe kind of hear back, you know, what you found out, what you can report back to us. Finance may tell you, you know, here's what we think the excess is, and say what we've heard before, which is not really a finance budgeting issue, more of a higher level board kind of an issue. So maybe we let Christine come back to us in a couple of weeks with what she's been able to find out, and we determine where we go from there.
So I'm happy to take it back. I don't think I'll be providing any financial reporting in the next 2 weeks. I'll bring it back to the team, and we can. I hear the interest.
Great, thank you. Okay, any other questions or comments on that letter? So I guess we'll wait to get feedback and then perhaps do a redraft. Okay, did Keith come yet? He said he was coming late. Okay. Why don't we move on to team reports and skip over the VeriSign SEC issue. Newsletter, Bill.
Bill Dozier, newsletter. Really probably just working at putting something together after this meeting's over with. The initial plan was come into Beijing with an updated newsletter, but everything's moving rapidly, and it's hard to find a point to kind of document it and send it out as a matter of record. So very little to comment on except in report, except we'll be moving to put a newsletter out to the group after this meeting. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Staten Hammack, RRA.
Thanks, John. Staten Hammack on behalf of United TLD. To bring everybody up to speed, and for those of you who aren't familiar with what the RRA working group has been doing, it was convened after the registrar meeting in Amsterdam. There were a number of new applicants there who expressed interest in getting some help with drafting their registrar agreement. So we convened a little working group to see what we could do to help out new applicants with that effort. We realized, though, that we had some limitations. We couldn't act as everybody's lawyer and be drafting contract terms, specific contract terms for everybody. So what we decided to do was do some research for people by creating an outline of what we thought were key provisions that should be in a good RRA, and then to go out and look at other RRAs currently, pick some of the best provisions that we saw and put them in the outline to give people signposts and guidance, or at least something to look at and compare as their respective lawyers and teams were drafting RRAs. So we've had a few meetings, we've created an outline, and have assigned some research to each of the members of the working group. However, in the words of Krista, we've all become heavily tasked in recent weeks, so that effort to complete that outline at Beijing has been derailed a little bit, so we're a little behind schedule, but it's not going to be useful for anybody if we wait too much longer to produce something. So what I would ask is, or what I plan to do is circulate what we have to date, which is the outline itself, plus some directional points to good RRA provisions, and then ask other members of the NTAG to jump in who have looked at other provisions and can say, yes, this is a good confidentiality provision, or this seems to be a good assign. These are two or three good assignment provisions to take a look at and help the working group complete its task. Any questions?
Okay. Thanks, Stat. No questions. Any other teams that we didn't list have any report? Okay. Moving on to the Domain Name Industry Trade Association update. Jordan?
The only update I'm going to provide is that the Trade Association has formed an interim board of directors with Adrian Kinders being the chair. I think there's other members of the board of directors in the room. I'm not one of them, so I defer to one of them to comment.
Okay. Staten, you want to do that?
Sure. So the Domain Name Trade Association formed an interim board and selected working group teams to start the work on developing the association and getting it launched. And these working groups were four in number. There's a scope working group, which was tasked with articulating the scope and mission and purpose of the organization, and who the membership would be, who the targeted membership would be. A governance group, of which I'm working group lead, which will articulate that scope in formation documents and work on construction of membership tiers and how that looks. And then there's a funding group that is going to be looking at raising funds for the organization, both in terms of dues and fee structures. And then there's a marketing group, also tasked with focus primarily on our first priority of the association, which is the education and promotion of top-level domain names. However, that's not the only scope and purpose of the organization. It's much broader than that specific task, but that is one of the first priorities of the organization. It will be a voice of the domain name industry, and will be providing feedback and input on matters affecting it.
And people, first of all, what's the name of it?
Domain Name Association, DNA.
And if anyone wants to get information about how to join, who maybe people weren't available for the meeting that we had on Monday, I guess?
Well, any of the working group leads can answer your questions, and any of the members of the interim board. Liz Sweezy is one of the working group members. Tim Switzer is one of the working group members. Myself are all here today, and there may be others. And, of course, Adrian is our interim chair. I want to emphasize that it's an interim board. That means this is not the first board. It's not the real board. It's not the elected board. Those will be those board members will be elected by the members of the organization. But what we needed to create was an interim board that could be the catalyst for getting all of this moving forward, including, you know, the practical steps, which are, you know, formation documents and due structures and membership structures and how we should, you know, get the members ready to basically be the beneficiaries of this organization.
Thanks, that Tim.
The other thing, this is Tim Switzer. The other thing I would mention on top of what Staten just said, as far as finding out more information and signing up to receive information, there's been a website that's been set up called whatdomain.org. And that's been put together by the marketing group, that the working group. So again, go to that. Got some preliminary things they've been working on, but I know I'm pretty sure on that there's a place where you can, you know, I'm interested in learning more and get part of the list.
Yeah, there's a form where you can fill out name and contact information to get on our mailing list and to receive more information.
So what's the URL? Whatdomain.org?
Right.
Whatdomain.org. Okay. It's in the chat. Perfect. Thank you, Frank. Any other questions on DNA? It's a new acronym. Excellent. All right. So we're going to go back to the VeriSign ESAC, or it's actually the VeriSign SEC report related to the an ESAC report in part. But I don't think VeriSign is here. I invited Chuck and Keith, and Keith told me he would try to make it, but it might be a little late. So I asked Jeff if he would go through the through some of the issues so people know what's going on.
Sure, and the reason to go through some of these issues is just to determine whether the NTAG as a group wants to respond or not. And I'm not going to offer any kind of I know this is unusual for me, but I'm not going to offer any kind of value judgments on this letter. But just kind of take you through some of the issues. So this was a filing from VeriSign before the Security and Exchange Commission. It's called a Form 8K, and I think most of you probably have a copy of this. And if there is anyone from VeriSign here, that'd be great to talk about it. But there are a number of issues that are mentioned in this filing. Ultimately, the filing concludes at least based on my reading, that there are still a number of security and stability issues with the introduction of new GTLDs, and that the process should be delayed, I guess, until some of these or all of these issues are worked out. There's a reference in here to, and of course some of these things we know are ongoing anyway, but there's a reference in here to a paper called ESAC 57, which many of you, if you attended the Security Stability Resiliency session 2 days ago, I'm getting days mixed up here, that was discussed in pretty extensive detail about internal certificates. And there was a paper written by ESAC. There was a mitigation plan put into effect by ICANN. That there were steps taken to mitigate that, and there's ongoing activities to further mitigate those issues. I'm not going to go into those issues now, but suffice it to say there are some in the community, like VeriSign and PayPal, I think, was another one, that don't believe that that's gone far enough, and that that's maybe just transferred some of the issues from the certificate authorities onto the users. So that's one issue. There's issues in here about pre-delegation testing that I guess will be the subject of the next meeting at 11 o'clock being held. There's a reference in here about ICANN not being done with the EBRO, the emergency backend registry operators. At the time this letter was written, the operators had not been identified, at least to the public. So there was some concern about that. There were concerns expressed in the letter about the trademark clearinghouse and the lateness of specs being delivered and the ability to test with the clearinghouse. And so all these issues are in this letter. I will tell you that this letter was picked up by a number of organizations that may or may not want the new TLD program to go ahead. So this has been championed by those groups. So if you look at I'm frankly a little bit glad that the letter hasn't generated a lot of discussion here, which means that it may not have generated a huge momentum against the new TLD program going forward. But again, I do think that if there are issues that the NTAG members have and want to draft a letter to address those issues, this may become a larger issue. I don't know, but it certainly, if gone unaddressed, it may pose a threat to the schedule and timing that we have.
Thanks, Jeff. That's a helpful overview. Any comments, thoughts, discussion? Should we take any action, send a letter or anything, raise comments? Jordan?
I mean, I do think, as Jeff alluded to, some of these, in very rapid progress, some of these have already been addressed by ICANN or recent events. I think it may be useful to, to the extent this letter is out there and is causing uncertainty and creating excuses for delay in the program, I think it may be useful for the NTAG to do an evaluation of the issues. I think there are, in fact, some substantive and real security and stability issues that it would be good to see some resolution around prior to the delegation of a very small number of TLDs. And I think what we're at risk of is that these risks associated with a very small number of TLDs have the potential to delay the entire program, which would be incredibly unfortunate. And so I think it may be useful for some sort of response by NTAG to sort of identify where either issues have already been identified or to sort of identify what the risk profile might actually look like. Now, the problem with this will be, in order to be really realistic and effective, we might have to acknowledge that there are some TLDs that there is a risk profile associated with. That may not be popular for the applicants for those particular TLDs, but I think that would be a much more powerful intervention by NTAG than somebody who just says, there's no problem, go ahead, don't worry about it, because that will just, in my opinion, that would be perceived as just sort of a Pollyanna-ish approach to this problem.
Rubens?
For the record, Rubens Q. Part of the VeriSign letter wasn't directed to the specific strings of the security issues, but the root server delegation. And that posed two issues. One, I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I think there is a serious conflict of interest between VeriSign, the .com register operator, and VeriSign, the root zone management operator. Because the root zone management operator needs to perform his function, but in performing this function, it goes against the VeriSign, the .com registry business, which is would be better if there were no DTLDs. So I see a conflict of interest here, and this letter goes to the heart of that. You see, the second issue is this letter goes against what either VeriSign and TIA released some months ago about their being ready to delegate 100 TLDs a week, and this letter now tells exactly the opposite. So I think that's a higher risk in this part of the letter than the part that only mentions the ESAC 57 and those 13 on at most 57 TLDs.
Thank you, Rubens. Any other thoughts or comments? So next steps, Jordan, what do you think?
I mean, if there's folks other than myself interested in working on a response, I'd be glad to work with folks on that. So hopefully there is.
We got Rubens and Jordan. Anyone else want to help work on a response to the VeriSign?
It doesn't have to be the people in this room. You can send your technical people to the discussion as well.
True. Do you mind sending a note to the list?
Yeah, sure. Glad to.
That'd be great. Thank you. Okay. So I think that exhausts our agenda. Any other business or any other issues that anyone wants to raise? Okay. James and then Anthony.
Yeah. I don't see the... I thought we may be talking about objection maybe in the next meeting, but since that most of us are going to receive objection, or the objection is going to be published on the 12th of April, I thought we should talk about some of these fraudulent objections that we have been receiving, as well as objection that has not in accordance to the procedures being outlined by the guidebook. So I don't know whether other people actually receive the same problem as we do.
Okay. Krista?
This is Krista. As with respect to the not following the process, I mean, I know that there are applicants that received objections that came in, for instance, after the timeline. And in the new GTLD update, which I only saw part of it, so maybe this was addressed in there and someone can tell me offline what I missed. But what I heard from ICANN, from Christine, is that the dispute resolution providers are basically responsible for the different things that are going on, as well as the evaluators are. And so I guess from my perspective, if an objection came in late, there was a lot of time to file objections. If it was received after the timeline, we certainly wouldn't process an application that was received after the deadline. I'm not sure why we would be allowed to process an objection, but so far these objections appear to be, you know, continuing down the path, at least the ones that I've seen.
So I guess that's a question for Christine. It's purely in the purview of the dispute resolution provider. Did you give any guidance as far as late filings and stuff?
So we didn't give guidance in terms of late filings. The DRSPs amongst themselves discussed this issue, and due to their own system issues, the synchronization of clocks around the world and concerns they had, they elected to extend the window by 5 minutes and accept objections that were filed according to some clocks in some parts of the world, 5 minutes after the deadline. Beyond that, I mentioned in the update that there were so far 220 objections that went through the verification administrative review process. So I think that not all objections filed will meet that criteria and be verified.
Okay. Yeah, there was a requirement for service to the applicant as well, and you know, we had a couple, one that went into our spam filter, so we never saw that, but there were a couple that we were never served on, and that's a process that we notified the provider, so we're not sure how that's going to happen, how that's going to be resolved. Okay. Jordan, Anthony, James. I'm sorry.
Christine, I'll go back and double-check, but I do think at least one of the dispute resolution providers asserts that ICANN gave them guidance around that 5 minute grace. So it may be worth I'll check that offline, but it may be worth clarifying with them about the language they're using otherwise.
Anthony.
Yes, the previous discussion is a useful segue into my question, which has to do with the transparency of the different panels that you've hired. So you've got all these different panels evaluating this and that. You have DRSPs, you have various screening panels, and so on. And they appear to me to be a bit of a black box. So, In goes the information, out comes the decision. If it appears to someone that that hasn't been done correctly, or there may have been some, you know, the decision doesn't make any sense, what procedures are there, if any, to let applicants or indeed other members of the community know what went on and how decisions were reached and whether they were reached according to the processes and guidance that ICANN gave them? So that would mean, what was the guidance that ICANN gave them and what was their procedure? So my question to you is, how do we know this? And if we can't know it, why not?
So when I started 6 months ago, I inherited the work of panels that were in process that had procedures that had received guidance. We have worked very hard to publish applicant advisories and share the guidance as beyond what's in the guidebook. When there are clarifications which have been needed, we have published applicant advisories. Yes, there are definitely procedures that the panels follow. So in terms of making some of that information public, I can certainly take that back and look into.
Specifically, I'm interested in the guidance that ICANN gave the panels initially, and furthermore, guidance, or to put it another way, interference at a later stage. Of course, the one that springs to mind is the string similarity panel, which was supposed to be delivered in October and wasn't delivered until much later. There are all kinds of rumors flying around about who said what to whom, when, and if it was justified, and if indeed these things were done on the scientific basis they were supposed to, or if indeed there were political decisions. So in order to clear that up, I would like to know about the communications between ICANN and the panels, what they were about, and if they in fact affected the decisions of the panels. Thank you.
Jeff?
Yeah, I want to echo Anthony's comments on the string similarity. Nothing came out afterwards. We expected at least some point afterwards some rationale or some explanation of why the string similarity panels came out the way they did, but there is none. In fact, there are certain strings, and it's not even just based on the algorithm, because there are certain strings that have higher percentages that were not found to be similar than ones that were. No idea why that was decided, no explanation. I won't go over the examples in public, but I'd be certainly happy to present them to you. I just don't want to anger any applicants for strings, and nor am I saying that they should be added. But what I am saying is that it seems like we have no idea who was on the panels. We have no idea what rationale they used. We have no idea what criteria they were given. And it's almost like I can't just expect, say, this omnipotent panel decided they were similar, and let's all go on. But some of us aren't ready to go on. We need that rationale. The GAC asked for that rationale yesterday, and I believe it's owed to the community.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. I had on this point, or yeah, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I will say we were surprised by the results of the string similarity panel and ended up spending some significant amount of money in string similarity objections for strings that we thought would. Yeah, no problem. you know, John, our strings now won't be confusing to users. It's great. but in any case, you know, we were surprised by the results, and you know, ended up having to spend a significant amount of money as a result of results that I think most people in the community expected to come out a different way, especially on pluralizations. I know the GAC raised this concern as well. So at least understanding sort of how we got there, I don't think it's necessarily that useful for this round, but you know, for future rounds, it may be useful to understand the process here and see if it can be improved.
Okay. Jim, is it on this point or a different point?
It's back on the objection panel.
Okay, let me go to James then first.
So I'd like to go back to procedure violation. In two specific cases, we have a DSRP that gives the filer 5 days grace after the 30th of March objection in order to cure some of the defects in the procedure. So I'd like to know what's ICANN position on this.
The DRSPs have their own procedures, their own definitions of their process, and I do believe they have cure mechanisms. There, when portions of the objection were filed, fees, the objection. So I am not versed in all of those details, but the procedures are called out on the DRSP's website. So we are expecting that they are following those procedures.
But the guidebook make it very clear that all the procedures must be completed by 30th of March. And if the deadline is over, what's...
It sounds like it's something you got to raise with the DRSP. It's not an ICANN issue at this point. Krista, did you have something to add?
Just a follow-up or like a high-level question on that particular topic. Christine, if there is an issue with a DRP not following their published procedure, is there something is there a process for us to do that?
So I'm happy for those issues to be escalated to ICANN and the new GTLD team, and we've gotten plenty of inquiries on that front. So we are working very closely with the DRSPs to make sure that they are following their procedures. They do this every single day.
So those escalations should be sent to
new GTLD at
the new ICANN. GTLD. Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yep.
Where else? All right, Jim?
They've got me blocked on an email. I sent too many. This is more a question for the room. The community spent years developing the procedures and processes outlined in the guidebook, and we just heard that the dispute resolution providers decided on their own to make changes.
Did I hear changes or just things that aren't dealt with in the guidebook? Right.
Well, they decided to extend a deadline. That, to me, is, I mean, on their own.
The guidebook didn't specify a time and a date. Did not specify 23/59/59. There are implementation and issues around the operational execution of aspects of the guidebook, and I completely understand the sensitivity around objections. I'm not trying to dismiss the concern and the nature of your concerns at all. From an administrative point of view, we're talking about multiple systems, various issues that the DRSPs were faced with, portions of the filing, parts of it coming earlier, parts of it coming later. There were a number of issues that each of the DRSPs were using, and we asked them to fall back on their rules for deadlines and their rules for handling things that fall across a specific deadline. So that was...
People had 7 months to file these things. And then to decide, as somebody said, if you filed your application late, sorry, no dice. That's amazing.
Okay, I've got Matt. I got Maxim, and then Craig, and then Anthony.
If we are talking about 5 minute delay, as a former technical guy, I could suggest off-shell commercial technology called GPS synchronization, which is cheaper than $1,000 and could solve these issues. So,
okay. Craig?
Yeah, as one of the applicants that received a late objection filing, I can confirm that the ICC said that they consulted with ICANN before they decided to extend the filing period. So it wasn't that ICC did it by itself. It said they actually talked to ICANN before they did it.
Okay. Yeah, we got one of those too. Sorry.
I mean, it sounds pretty prevalent. I mean, I'm Jordan, John, Craig. It seems like there's a lot of objections that were received in these last 5 minutes. That's a problem. It's not like it's a one or two. I mean, if three people in this room said they received them, that's crazy.
Anthony.
Yeah, I'd like to point out there's a difference between 5 minutes, which I possibly there are reasons for that, and the very, very long delay in the string similarity panel results. There are other panels. Not all these issues have surfaced yet. What I'm interested in is not so much the internal procedures of the DRSP or the panel. I'm interested in the guidance that ICANN provided to these panels insofar as it is different from what's in the guidebook. And I think we are owed, as applicants who spent a lot of money, an explanation and a clarification and an exposition of the communications between ICANN and the DRSPs. Because if there were decisions made by ICANN that are in contravention of what was in the guidebook, we have a right to know that, and that may be actionable. And I think this is an extremely serious matter.
Okay. Anyone else in the queue on any issue, any other business? Tim.
Tim Switzer, just a real quick thing. I noticed a question from Frank Miklick on the Adobe chat. Frank, yes, the website that you reference for signing up form for the Domain Name Association, that is the correct one.
Okay. Any other business? If not, hopefully many of us will be in Durban together and maybe even as voting members of the registry stakeholder group at that point. So congratulations to everyone, hopefully in advance, and good luck. Thanks for everyone's time. Bye.